All right, good morning, everyone. We'll call the meeting of the Organizational Committee of the St. Paul City Council to order. Good morning. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm not Council President Amy Brenmullen. I'm Council Vice President Rebecca Naker, and I'll be chairing today's meeting in Council President Brenmullen's absence. You can address me as Chair Naker and council members. There was a little confusion about that last time, so I just wanted to be clear about that. And we're really excited to have several members of our Office of Neighborhood Safety and broader Community First Public Safety team here today to update us on approaches and responses to gun violence. This is part of quarterly updates on Community First Public Safety. We haven't quite had them quarterly in quite a while, but we're looking forward to getting back on that schedule, starting with today. So I believe, and it's our only agenda item, and Director Blakey, my understanding is that you're going to kind of MC us and take us away. Is that right?
Yes, Council Member.
Okay, great. Well, then I will turn things over to Director Blakey. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning. I'm Director Brooke Blakey with the Office of Neighborhood Safety, and I am joined with my team and supporters of the Office of Neighborhood Safety. And so we're just going to talk a little bit about Project Peace, Operation Spire, our community partners. And so we're going to have a few people come across and speak, our collaboration with the City Attorney's Office, which is where my office is housed, with our St. Paul Police Department, and Operation Spire, with our partners Healing Streets, and then with some of the other members of my team, Parks and Rec. And then you'll get some information at the library board meeting later today with our library team. I am actually not sure how to operate all of this. It's coming off of my computer, so there you go. I'm not sure. So,
and actually, just before you get going, Director Blakey, sorry, I was supposed to mention one piece of housekeeping, and I completely forgot it. There are hard copies up at this front table for anyone who would like one. And then, of course, in addition, you can see on these screens, and if we look like we're staring into space, we're looking at the screen that is right in front of us right down here.
So just to kind of give you a brief overview, we're going to talk about GVI and CVI, which are group violence interventions and gun violence interventions, which is the data-driven approach that we have utilized to create Project Peace. And what we are doing is a hybrid approach of GVI and CVI. So I thought it would be very helpful to just give you a brief introduction of what GVI and CVI are, because you'll hear us use those acronyms throughout the presentation, or GVRS, which are gun violence reduction strategies. One of the things that I do want to say is that this portion of gun violence and Project Peace is a small part of the overall operation of the Office of Neighborhood Safety and our alternative response initiatives, as well as all of the other things that the Office of Neighborhood Safety works with. So just to get started, GVI, which is the group violence intervention, is really a data-driven approach to reduce homicides and gun violence and minimize harm to communities by replacing enforcement with deterrence, which is our Project Peace Operation Aspire program. It fosters stronger relationships between law enforcement and the people they serve. GVI really focuses on a small group of individuals who are at high risk to be victimized or offend, and the intention is, at the very minimum, to keep them alive, safe, and out of prison. The GVI partnership communicates directly with group members, conveying powerful messages from our community, which is one of the things that we really talk about out of the Community First Public Safety lens, is that the community drives this work, and the community is who we listen to. And the main point of this is an opportunity to really stop the immediate risk of being a victim of gun violence or perpetrating gun violence by providing immediate and long-term support, and make sure that we as a community are saying that we are no longer interested in gun violence. So really how the GVI framework really works, it's very simple. We facilitate direct, sustained, relentless engagement with a small group of individuals that are involved in homicides or serious violence, and this is the approach. The approach is to really be very focused. It's not a program. And I think it's very clear that we talk about this is not a program. GVI is not a program. It's an approach, and it's part of the framework of what we're trying to do to facilitate sustained programmatic issues for gun violence. So as you see, how GVI works is it's focused attention on the high-risk groups. We identify in real time the small numbers of individuals who are at risk. There's open lines of communication and direct and respectful communication with those individuals. We establish clear standards against violence and what we see as safety and success from the people who are influential at highest risk. We offer meaningful support to keep people safe, alive, and out of prison. and we really look at a strategic consequence of what is the last resort if someone is going to engage in violence.
Dr. Blakey, when you mentioned identifying real-time small numbers of the highest risk people in groups, can you paint the picture? I think one of the things I'm looking for out of this presentation is a little bit more of the specifics and color as to how this actually works, because I think we've heard about it at a very high level. So how many people on average are you working with at any given time?
So we have currently on our referral list 136 individuals that are on our list. And so if we're going to deviate from the PowerPoint, which is completely fine with us, we can just tell you how the process generally goes, and then you can ask questions if that works for the group a little bit better. And then you can refer back to our PowerPoint at any point in time if that's what you'd like to proceed with. So generally what happens is there are incident reviews of individuals that come into our office, and that is provided through Operation Aspire and Project Peace. So if you want to flip all the way past all of this and go to Project Peace, I can kind of explain how that works and how a person comes into the group. And I'll start with Operation Aspire. And really what Operation Aspire is those are individuals that are referred to us through the St. Paul Police Department Aspire unit. And I'll let you talk about the Aspire unit, Chief.
Yeah, so our Aspire unit works in our gang and gun...
Chief, I'm so sorry.
Maybe we should go through the presentation and then... Because I'm afraid if we get... I think it would be better to see the presentation and then maybe ask our specific questions. It would be helpful where possible for you to mention as you're going through it the numbers of people that you're dealing with, who's in GBI, how many are coming through police and Aspire. And also, is the GBI program the one that was funded with the $900,000 grant through Betty McCollum's office?
No, that is not.
Okay, so we'll find that out later, too?
Yes. I think what I was trying to do is just give you a brief overview of what GBI and CBI are, and then as we get towards the end of that, we'll talk about numbers and how it works and who's engaged and give you some stories that go along with that information and the process. So this was just kind of giving you an understanding of what GBI and CBI are, and then go from there.
Let's proceed with the presentation. I apologize for any confusion. Sometimes we ask questions as we go on the slides, and that doesn't mean that we don't want to hear the rest of the presentation. So let's keep going.
Okay. So we talk about just cost of gun violence and what that looks like for here across the United States. It's about $457 billion here. Gun violence is roughly about $1.4 million for a fatal homicide and about $46,000 per non-fatal incident. And this is how the gun violence reduction strategy works. And so what we have done with work with our national network of safe communities is look at what our gun violence problem analysis is. And what that was John Jay, who is our national technical assistance team, has taken the opportunity to look at 3 years' worth of data that was provided with the St. Paul Police Department to look at what is our gun violence problem analysis. And what we have done from that is we've decided to continue to have weekly shooting reviews, which we call incident reviews, in which we review each weekly gun violence portions that we have. And within that, we have those weekly coordination meetings with our partners that we have here in the room that are joining us. We really talk about what is that direct and respectful conversation that we have, and then we decide how do we connect those to the needed support. And then we also talk about utilizing our corrections and our probation to have focused supervision and enforcement. And then we continue to do this cycle each time for the individuals that are a part of this strategy that we employ with Project Peace Operation Aspire. The second portion of the work that we do is CVI, which is Community Violence Intervention, which is really the roadmap of looking at all of the cohesive parts of how we keep folks here in our city safe. And it really is the collaborative work of our our police department, our hospitals and community corrections folks, our police department, and making sure that we have healing center practices, our community-based organizations that are helping us with the violence interruption, our street outreach, which are all of our different community-based organizations, along with some of our churches and other folks like that, and then also looking with our school district and working cohesively as a whole.
Yes. So, because you're trying to like help us understand GVI and CVI, so if I'm understanding correctly, is GVI like we're working closely with a specific group, we're mapping that network, we're understanding them on an individual level, we're coming up with individual solutions, and it's really like about just the group, and then CVI is like the next level up, macro, we're looking at the conditions, we're looking at the gaps, we're filling those in. It's like the social infrastructure piece. Like, is that basically the summary of the difference?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And with that, that's what I was going to say. We have an integrated gun and group violence prevention strategy, which is what we engage in here in the Office of Neighborhood Safety, which is a comprehensive, long-term, and sustainable approach to driving reductions in violence. And so with that, it shows right there. We have our community moral voice, our law enforcement, providing the wraparound services, victim services, and life coaching. So you have your gun violence reduction strategies on your left, which currently we have our incident reviews and custom notifications. We haven't done call-ins yet as we're developing, as we're still in our pilot phase. And call-ins are when you bring the whole entire group into a room and really break down that you guys are on our radar. We see these things that are happening within the community or we're no longer going to tolerate it. Right now we're really focusing on those custom notifications so that we can have that personal connections with individuals to make sure that we're getting them and their families the correct services that they need. Then we have the CVI process, which over there is the restorative practices that we're using our community justice unit. We have our outreach, our community stabilization, and then our hospital-based interventions, which are our Healing Street Friends.
Ms. Prince.
So is it possible that the same individuals are involved in both sides of that?
Yes. Yes. You've seen this organizational model before, and so this was just a refresher for the group to just explain how we're all lined up, who's the strategic lead in this, what Project Peace stands for, the implementation, and then who our community partners are, our justice partners, our support and outreach partners, and our system partners. And with that, I will turn over Project Peace and Operation Spire to Chief Henry.
Thank you so much, Chair Naker, council members. So Project Peace, I think you're starting to figure out now, is the overarching methodology or approach that we're having. And a component of that is the law enforcement falls underneath it. I think sometimes there's people make the mistake of thinking that this is a police-run thing in which Project Peace falls under that, and actually it's the reverse of that. And so we're a component, like many other components, underneath the overarching umbrella that helps support this. And so in the beginning of the summer of 2022, three commanders for the police department, myself, Commander John Linson, and Commander Jeff Stitt, both were in the room now, were asked to start to develop this process. And we came up with our Aspire group, which pulled officers off of their normal assignment, and ranging for anywhere from, I think, 2.5 years experience all the way up to some have over 20 years of experience to get a good mix. Very personality driven. We had a big input into what it was, and it was the idea was that we would be focusing on this new approach. One of the things that's important to know about this, and if you've learned about GVI programs around the country, is many people will say, well, that won't work in this environment because the conditions in that city where they had success are not like they are here. The conditions where these approaches have been successful are literally identical to the problems that we're dealing with in our city. And what I mean by that is it's a very small percentage of the people in our city that are driving the highest ends of violence. The other truism that that we account for is that the people that are most likely to shoot and kill someone in our city are also the most likely to be shot and killed in our city. And so, in essence, when we identify people, it isn't like we're trying to build a RICO case against them, but more that we're trying to save their lives. And we also know that it potentially saves someone else's life. So our group works very hard to try to figure out what's happening. So what I'll give you is kind of a really simple example of how this can play out. Axel Henry is a 19-year-old. I'm involved in guns and group violence. I'm doing things in the city. I'm on a path. And let's say I get involved in a shooting. I get arrested. There's clearly going to be a consequence for that. I have a gun. Maybe that gun has a switch on it, whatever. That legal piece, that enforcement piece is there. But I've got a 14-year-old brother who looks up to everything I do and now thinks it's really cool that I'm locked up and in jail. We've got to get resources to that person, get someone interfacing with the family to talk about them. We have resources going to me in jail saying, listen, if your friends are planning on retaliating on this and having that conversation about we need to stop that cycle of violence with you, it's already a failure that it got to the point that you needed to be arrested. You're not going to get out from underneath those consequences, but we want to see you go successfully forward, and we don't want to see this become one of these chain letters. Maybe I also, while I was out, was giving money to my mother, and I was living in that house, and now that source of income is gone, and she's at risk of losing her apartment for her and the 14-year-old. So we're coming in to deal with that issue as well. So it's this holistic approach that really looks at how do we stop the current violence pieces in the very small percentage that they're there, and then how do we bring in the resources? I kind of, in my brain, I'm a visual person. I think about there was a game when I was a little kid where you dropped a marble into a thing and it would find its way down through into a calendar. Well, basically, all of these resources are those. And sometimes that marble belongs with three or four of those resources, but we have to make sure that you have them there. And so really, when I break it down for community members, I talk about the acronym PI, and I think about a circle graph. We have prevention, we have intervention, and we have enforcement. None of those pieces work without the other pieces being there. But to our mind, prevention's the gold medal. If we can prevent something, we can identify a potential problem and cut it off before it ever and deal with it and get it resourced and get it redirected in a direction where there's never violence, there's never a need for an arrest. That's where we get our gold medals. If we have to intervene, someone's getting in trouble at the lower levels, so there's still some consequences, but we can redirect that, maybe divert that somewhere else and get them into programs and things. That's our silver medal. And if we have to come in and enforce, which we will do and we do, that's the bronze medal for us. I always tell folks, would you rather that I told you that we caught the burglar who stole all your stuff, or would you rather be told we prevented your house from being burglarized? And so we are trying to work in concert with one another, and it benefits everybody, because what our community members and the individuals in the program, to be quite frank, see is that we are all lending each other our credibility, and we are all lending each other resources. These relationships aren't just working at our level. They're actually going down and going into the folks that we deal with. And that really, in kind of a nutshell, is what they do. Our officers, when there's a shooting and someone goes to Regions, we're calling Healing Streets. They're down there helping us out. We're helping them out. And like many programs, sometimes what we do is once things are safe, we even take a step back and allow that process to play out a little better, because there's a lot of these folks are very happy to talk to our officers, but let's be frank, some are not. And so we allow those processes to play out with the goal in mind that we want to get long-term fixes and solutions to the violence problem and stop those patterns that are out there. Does that help?
It does. And just before you go, Councilmember Prince, I just want to encourage everyone. It is exciting that we have a packed house, and I know we have room for the three folks who are standing in the back, not to put you on the spot. So if everyone could just scooch over a little bit, like we do if you attend a faith community, we're all friends. I think we can find room for everyone. And folks in the hall, come on in. We can get tighter. All right. Thanks, everyone. Councilmember Prince.
I think here it would help to understand one of the things that we hear repeatedly about people who we arrest or people who we talk to, even who aren't the perpetrator, who are involved in an incident where no one will talk. And that has become one of the really big problems, is that we can't get people to talk about who may have done something or where they went or whatever. So how does this get at that issue?
Chair Naker, council members. So that actually speaks directly to what we're talking about, is when we have that kind of immediate real-time triage, like, for example, in the scenario I described, we're at Regions Hospital, and Healing Streets is down there helping calm things down, because it's not uncommon in our city to have a bunch of family members obviously very upset, a loved one's been killed or shot down there, and then after that fear starts to drop a little bit, the anger comes up, and then there's plans of we got to go out and revenge this or, you know, do whatever. We have people that are working through that and letting them know that A, isn't a good idea for them and the city, but also isn't a long-term fix and it isn't going to undo some of those problems. And so that is, although that's not something you start doing and then that problem immediately goes away, it's not a light switch, it is something that's getting better, but I really feel like it's probably more powerful if they hear that from you.
And actually, Council Member Naker and Council Member Chair Prince, I actually have someone from my staff that can give you a brief overview of what that looks like, a story to explain. So I'm going to have my program manager, Faith Lofton, step up and give that information.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Naker. Good morning, Council Members. My name is Faith Lofton. I am the new program manager for Project Peace in the Office of Neighborhood Safety. As Director Blakey stated, I will be providing details of the coordination and the work done to support a family and the victims in a shooting that took place on University and Dell on February 25th, 2023. On that Saturday evening, the ONS team were getting dressed up, ready to attend the first annual St. Paul Firefighters United Ball in support of other St. Paul colleagues. While getting ready, Director Blakey received notification that there was a shooting that took place with the possibility of multiple victims. As a routine practice, Director Blakey reached out to the Healing Streets team, deploying them to Regents Hospital as we awaited more information from the Aspire officers in Healing Streets. Also notifying Mayor Carter, Deputy Mayor, and City Attorney of the report. As we arrived to the event, Director Blakey and I received multiple calls from the community members with concerns of the incident and the possible victims. Director Blakey continued her communication with Aspire officers and Healing Streets. After being seated at the event for less than 5 minutes, I received a message from the victim's sister stating that her brother had been shot and killed. Upon confirming information with Mayor Carter and Director Blakey, without hesitation, Director and I left the event and headed to United Hospital to support the family. Being born and raised in St. Paul, Rondo community, through social capital, I have a connection to the family. As you could probably imagine, arriving to a hospital after a mother has been told that she has lost her oldest son, along with 40 to 50 other family members and friends, crying and screaming in pain, grieving the loss of their loved one. This is not an easy space to walk into. As I consoled the mother, grandmother, brother, and sister of the victim, Director Blakey immediately began to coordinate with the hospital staff and security. Director and I explained our roles at the Office of Neighborhood Safety and that we were there and available to provide support and assistance to them. We soon learned that this incident took place at a repast of another loved one they celebrated earlier that day, and that many of the family members had bared witness to the event that took place. The ONS team learned from the hospital staff that due to safety concerns, no one else was allowed to see the victim. Therefore, there was no longer gathering space, and the emergency room entrance had to be cleared. While showing empathy and grace to the grieving family, the ONS team was able to share this information with them, allowing them to relocate to another area peacefully. While the ONS team supported family at United Hospital, the Healing Streets team provided support to the victims and families at Regents Hospital. Sunday morning, I received a call from the family requesting assistance as they had no idea what to do or where to begin. Director Blakey and I scheduled a time to go out to the family's home and assist and explain some of the next steps in the process. During the nearly two-hour visit, the ONS team coordinated multiple support services that included assessment for safety and relocation needs, communication with the victim's children's schools, providing information in collaboration with DPS, Victim Reparations, providing information on local funeral homes, contact for medical examiner's office and processes, and engaging with the local funeral home director to assist in the planning. Leading up to the funeral service, ONS stayed in constant communication with the family and the Project Peace partners. With the unexpected financial hardship, the loss of wages, and sudden need to now provide for 4 grandchildren, ONS was able to assist the family with gift cards for food and transportation. Additional financial roadblocks were presented as the burial costs exceed the amount that the assistance provided by DPS would cover. ONS was able to assist with the costs, taking one less worry away from the grieving mother. In addition, the family was open to an understanding to the need of having a police presence nearby the church where the service was held. The family also agreed to have a private repass in order to increase public safety and reduce the probability for more violence to interrupt. In the aftermath of this violent incident, the Project Peace team coordinated supported services and relocation services to at least half of the dozen victims that were present the day of the shooting. After reading and hearing about a traumatic event in the city of St. Paul, most people's lives continue on. For the victims and their family, they continue to live with trauma, requiring ongoing healing, financial and mental health services that is continuously needed. The team's work with the family is continuous. Having the ability to provide this high level of support and resources to families during such a tragic time in their lives continues to build trust between the community, the Office of Neighborhood Safety, the St. Paul Police Department, and all Project Peace partners, which ultimately helps to make the city of St. Paul a safer community for all. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate not only the work that you do, but your help painting that picture in such detail.
Thank you.
Are there questions? Or?
I don't have a question. I just want to acknowledge what was shared and that this work is very deep and very heavy and that there is sustained compounded trauma in an ongoing way. And I just want to, like, really offer our thanks and compassion for that story. Thank you.
And with that, I will turn it over to Healing Streets.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Council members. We appreciate you having us in this space. For us with Healing Streets, it's important. I'm briefly just going to go over just an overview very quickly over what Healing Streets is for people, just to give them a refresher. Healing Streets is a community-based violence prevention approach to the reduction and elimination of group and gun violence. And by group, we know that things aren't necessarily looking like gangs, right? There more can be groups or cliques. And as we know, and especially working with SPPD, and even in the broader sense with ONS, we understand that those groups and cliques can change week to week. And so for us, it's important to make sure that we are working with them in a space of getting them to spaces to heal. And so we have a three-pronged approach, which works with, like I like to say, from infants to elders, so across the board. Our first approach is a prevention. To tie into what Chief was saying, we want to prevent anything from happening. That's our first and foremost goal. And by doing that, we have lots of different avenues that we use. We use avenues in terms of, like, getting into alternative schools, standing up groups in those spaces, because we know in a lot of the alternative schools, they're not in that mainstream space, and it doesn't mean that things aren't happening in the mainstream, but we want to make sure that we're going to spaces to stand up, to start helping people who've been most impacted directly in that space. So that's one of the ways when we talk about prevention, is talking to them, getting them, doing groups and activities and things around them, understanding the impact of their actions. And so just like Chief was talking about, if there's a younger brother, a younger sister, a younger sibling, we want to make sure that we're before those things happen. So that's one of the ways that reflects in prevention. Also, prevention and intervention kind of tie hand in hand when we talk about our groups that we do in our Red Wing facility and our Moorhead facility. We know that we have people that have committed some different things in the community, and we know that they're incarcerated in that space. Our job in that then is to prevent, when they come home, future things from happening. We want to also intervene where they are, and with that, they're in spaces where they don't have choices. They're in spaces where they have to account for what they've done, and we don't totally understand that. With that being said, we also know that Healing Streets for us is a voluntary piece. We want people, these young people that are incarcerated, to understand that we're working with, that it's a choice for you all to be here with us. We have expectations, but it's a choice. And with that, we also connect with their families, because we don't just work with whether that's a community member or someone in incarceration, just with you, that's the doorway into families, to see what the family needs. We want people to come home to hopefully a better space than what they left. So with that are resources that could be connected to mental health things, resources that are to food, lights, gas. It's a lot easier for you to hear us if your stomach's not grumbling. So we want to make sure that we're having resources from the point of contact and then communicating that with the young people in these spaces to say, you have power in your decisions. Your decisions matter. By just being a part of Healing Streets, you allowed us to connect with your family, which hopefully allows them to get resources and support that you need, that you come home to a slightly different environment. And so those are ways when we talk about prevention and intervention that we want to be in those spaces. Also, an intervention is under ONS, when we get calls from that avenue, from that lane, we want to make sure that we are going to these spaces and point of contact. We're going, we have an MOU that's in process with Regions to be able to be in those spaces and work with people, not as security. Our job isn't to clear the area. Our job is to work with security so that we can work with the families and tailor a plan that works for them specifically on what their needs look like. Because we know hurt people hurt people. And so the people who have caused harm are also in need of services. They're also in need of support. It's not an either or, because the people who have been directly impacted by someone's actions, we know without a shadow of a doubt that is important that we support those people and where they are. And it's also equally important for us to make sure that we tap into the person who caused harm so that we can get to the root of the issue, the root of why they chose to pick up a firearm in the first place. So we're not choosing one or the other. We're choosing all, because all are important and all can come back to society and contribute in different ways. And so it's important for us in that intervention piece that we are looking at doing things that are across the gamut, healing all. We don't pick and choose. We want to make sure that everyone receives healing. And the great part about ONS is the communication between Brooke, Healing Streets, my team has been fantastic. What helps in our lane, which is a little different than historically, is with Healing Streets, my staff are formerly justice-involved individuals who have powerful and positive connections still in the community. So, if for example, to take the scenario where we had to show up for the man that was shot at the repass, we were already, when Brooke reached out to me, I was already at Regions. We were already in those spaces because my staff, when we find out something, we jump on a call together. We talk about what's happening, what's moving, who's this, and then I'm able to reach out. And it's beautiful when Brooke is saying, hey, here's what we got, here's what's happening, and Brooke is wanting to give me the information as soon as possible, and I can say, Brooke, I'm already standing right outside of here. Because having that connection, having that different avenue allows us to move a little faster, allows us to move a little different. And in a lot of cases, in this case being no exclusion, I had staff members that were connected to the people who were harmed in that space. And so we were already able to be in that space. We were already able to provide support and start talking about resources. And then with that, we don't just give out our card. We don't just say, hey, Healing Streets, give us a call. We ask to exchange numbers with community members and people so that when you're going through this level of trauma, right, that it's not on you to get in hold of us. It's on us to do the legwork to make sure we're following up with you and making sure you're in a good space. And that's really important for us because in this level of trauma, we have to understand that everyone needs help and help looks different. And our job is to make sure we're continually following up to make sure that those things happen. If you look here, you talk about from the provider's standpoint, from the school-based standpoint, and from the advocacy, those are the prevention pieces, but they're not limited to any of those things. Depending on what's needed at High School for Recording Arts to stand up and what it looks like looks different than when we work with Parks and Rec and say, hey, we need a healing circle in this space because something has happened. For us, it's that amoeba approach to be able to say, let's adapt to what's needed instead of telling people this is what you need. And then we actively listen to what we've heard and we create a plan with the individual, with the community, with the program, to give them what they need based on what they're telling us, not what they think they're telling us. When you look at the intervention piece, this kind of goes with the chain of how things are going with the Spire. We hear something, we get the communication going, I'm on the phone with my team, we start moving in those spaces. Now, also team members will also start working with family members, and then they also have caseloads. So with those caseloads, just to kind of get into some of the things that aren't on there, my team basically each have six right now. We're in the process of hiring a couple of more. Anywhere from 10 to 12 people that are on their caseloads right now. And that's just caseload work. And so when you look at that, I have a team of six. We also are going to scenes at least twice a month. So we're connecting with community. If you look at that, we're looking at closer to about 70 or 75 people that we're interacting with on a constant basis. And we have a level of a touch point where someone may say, I just need resources. I've been impacted by a group of gun violence, and I just need resources right now. Our job is to work with them, get them resources, and continually follow up, because we know 2 weeks from now you might need us. But a month from now you say, hey, I'm having issues with my young person and I need support in that way. So it's not a one and done for us. It's a continual. It's a continuum of how those things happen. And that goes to our long-term consequences. When we talk about the people who are in facilities, around supervised release, around prison, around conviction, around trial, court hearing, that's a part of that intervention piece where they've already been in our system, they're a part of our system, but our job is to keep them out of those spaces. And by interrupting anywhere that we can in those spaces to say, here are the tangible things that you need around job security, the tangible things you need around support for housing, all of those things. And the big thing part of that with ONS is to be able to reach out to Brooke and say, we have a family here that's in need of this. For the family that needed help with burial services, we were able to say, here's what we can do. Here's how we can support. Our answer is yes. We want to mold that yes to what the families, individuals, and community need in that space.
Thanks, Mr. Kimball.
Sure.
Mr. Lally had a question.
Well, I had a question, but you answered it in the full course of what you said, and so now it's just a kind of a comment. But my question was going to be, you know, I guess I'll start with the comment, which is that I remember like 2-3 budget cycles ago, I remember we didn't have most of the people in this room who are doing this work. We didn't have a Director Blakey. We didn't have an Officer Neighbor. Like, we didn't – all these things had not happened yet. And I remember very clearly the community saying, we want the city to fund these community-based initiatives with people like you and folks who've been through this, who have a lived experience, who, like, have trust. And so they fought really hard for Healing Streets. And my question was going to be, like, as we've brought in additional capacity, like, as the city has built out this team and added this staff and had these wonderful people that can do this work with you, what has that been like to amplify your efforts? And what I heard you say just now was basically, before it was just you kind of out there on your own, and now all of a sudden you have these number one and two people, folks, sorry, at the city that you can call who are, like, your backup or your side-by-side. Or, and I guess, yeah, is that, am I understanding this correctly? Because that's what it sounds like to me.
I'm going to say that in first of all, you're 100% correct. So thank you for noticing that and lifting it up. That's very important. What really happens and works in that space is another avenue is there can be communication because of relationships with Healing Streets directly to SPPD, right? But then even if that happens, my job in terms of our partnerships is to make sure that I'm communicating with Brooke and vice versa. And we do a great job across between SPPD, between ONS, between Healing Streets to make sure that we are filling these gaps of what these needs look like. And it's wonderful to be able to say to Brooke, hey, we've got these people. Yep, I know. We talked about them before. Remember, and this is what happened, and here's what you did, and here's what we did. So we are filling those gaps in that space. And it's beautiful to come at it from the different avenues because then it takes pressure off of everyone else because everyone gets to operate in the lane that they operate in, right? And I say that because as Healing Streets starts to work and people see that, they say, hey, how about you do this with domestic violence? Or, hey, how don't you do this with other kinds of violence? Which is equally important. So I don't want to take anything away from that. But as you stretch to all these different things of violence and take people out of their lane, there starts to become burnout. There starts to become all these things where people start to leave and these relationships leave with them. So to be able to have the partnership creates a balance that allows us, and I'm going to take a word from our director, Danny Givens, who is probably online listening to this space, an ecosystem. It creates an ecosystem that allows us to have an ecosystem of communication, of healing, and support, not just for the people we're serving, but for each other as well. So thank you for noticing that and lifting that up.
Well, and I'm encouraged to see it, and I'm glad to hear it because I have worked very hard, we all have, to grow these programs and kind of watch the seeds plant and grow, and like seeing it starting to unfold today is incredibly powerful. So just wanted to acknowledge that. Thank you.
Thank you. And there are other things in the PowerPoint that we have that's in front of you that if you have questions about, we can circle back and talk about. But I wanted to make sure that we talked about how it really looks. And that's what I was hearing from you from the beginning. And so it was important for me to make sure that I showed and how we're doing this work in partnership, and it looks different and everyone has a different role, but we support each other in that role greatly. And it's worked well for us. It's worked well for all of us.
Mr. Campbell, just before we switch gears, I heard you talk about going to regions, and I know that it took some time for that partnership to be established to actually be able to go into the hospital. So yes. I'm really glad to hear that that's happening now. Is that a partnership that you have with other – I know obviously regions is the primary one, but if we hear of folks in other hospital settings or other outpatient settings, do you have those kinds of partnerships where you can continue to interact with people right in that critical moment that you've talked about?
Thank you very much for that question. The answer right now is no, but the answer, like I've said, to anything is always yes. The yes looks different. Using this as a model on how to move forward in terms of our connection with everyone from security to the people who are doing emergency prepared work to the people who are working in emergency rooms. We're known in those spaces and trusted in those spaces, and now because of the MOU, we're able to move freely in those spaces to work with the families and where they are. We are hoping to use this as a model to replicate in any space that we need. So that could be United, that could be other spaces. So we're not closing the door on anything. We're actually, if anything, we're widening that door to be able to use this as a model moving forward for any of that. So great question. Thank you.
I hope if we can be helpful in those efforts to build those relationships and get that access, you'll let us know, because it's really critical to me that your team be able to be at the bedside, wherever that bedside happens to be.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Other questions for Healing Streets? Ms. Yang.
Well, first I want to say thank you so much for sharing about the work of Healing Streets. I'm really supportive of it, and I feel that having you here share about your work is really important, because that's how we humanize the experiences that people have out in the community. Because it really isn't about statistics. I think it's really about the lived experiences of what our community members are going through, and how we can come together to resolve and support them. And so a question I had for you was, really in this – in the work of Healing Streets overall, like, what do you feel are the biggest challenges that you all are facing right now, and how can we as a council support you all? In addition to, I know you mentioned like some challenges already, but do you have any other ones that you want to name?
Great question. There are challenges obviously in this work, and we can pick out kind of the ones that are on the top, on the surface. However, the other challenges that Director Givens and myself have started to work towards is we've created not a on-call system, but a callback system for staff. To give you an example, we had a space and time between December and January where we were back-to-back. Staff were back-to-back going to regions. And as we know, it can get tiring. And my phone and my staff's phone stays on 24/7. And so I can get a call at 1:30 in the morning and have to make that call. So what's important for us is in that system that we've created, we're creating a rotation that allows breaks in time and spaces for people to be in that. And what I will say to that, to the passion of my team and how great they are still trying to show up when it's not their turn, in a sense. And we understand that, but that's where Director Givens, myself, will take the hard line to say, you have to stay back. You have to stay back and make sure you take care of yourself and do these things. So one of the hugest challenges was making sure that because my staff is so connected and have respect in the community, that it's still not just falling on every single one to show up to every single scene, to make sure that we're planning out time for healing for our staff, right? Because who heals the healers? We can't do all of this great work in the community and come back to our families. We can't be a great director or a great supervisor or a great community mediator and a poor parent or a poor partner. And so we take that we're very serious with that. So we've just implemented that and created that space to allow that downtime to happen. Because of the passion, you want more people there because it's helpful. And at the same time, you want people to show up as them best selves, as the people who are offering support. So that is a huge challenge for us that we're continuing to look at. Another challenge I will say is having dollars that are fantastic is great, but understanding that having the right people in the space is important. So the time that it takes to really get the right people in the right spaces, we all know sitting in this room, the work is needed tonight. The work is needed in this moment. And if you've seen me while we've been sitting here, just to say out loud, look at my phone, it's because we've gotten calls in the afternoon to show up at regions and those things. And so looking at having more time and money to be able to get the right people in the right spaces. Because you may not see us walking the street in that space in that regard, but you will know us through the work we're doing with communities and families if you're asking those questions and tapping into that. And that we want to be able to blanket not just the city, we want to be able to blanket the county, and then looking at things in terms of creating this partnership across other counties to look at, you know, right now we're focused here and we want to grow this. Obviously, it's important. It's the most important piece that we have. We want to make sure as things are good and strong and powerful that information is shared, that support is shared. This level of teamwork is shared across the board because we know that that doesn't happen in other places. And so to have that replicated. So the time, the money, and also the space and time for staff to be able to heal and grow are kind of big challenges in that way.
I want to appreciate that as part of the vision because I just think about and see so many like youth workers, care workers, frontline professions, classroom teachers, therapists, at like so many different sectors where there are workers who struggle with like boundaries. They struggle with what they're experiencing, activating their own experiences. And it is rare that they get the supervision, the management, the support to like see that and create room and say, we're putting some of the work down so that you can actually repair yourself so that you can be well. It is extremely hard. I mean, we struggle with it in my office. We struggle with it in like everything. And so I am really encouraged to hear that that is front and center, or that the intention is for it to be that, because it is what we're dealing with is like 400 years of public policy decisions breaking people. Yes. And the amount of funding that we have put toward it is something that we all support. And I think we could all agree it does not like begin to rival the cost that it took to get us here. And so I just really want to like overemphasize that what you just shared is really important, and that, you know, I appreciate your question, Councilmember Yang, because it is something I think we should understand is the human side of the work to support you all. So thank you.
Last thing I'll say, thank you for that, Councilmember Jalali, is Director Givens was very intentional about making sure that we have healing coaches and bringing them on to staff. And so now we are looking at once a month, staff all coming together for healing sessions to help us in those spaces. Because, again, you can never have enough healing, right? As we look at over the last few weeks, there has been a reduction in violence that's been happening in our county, not just our city. And I know that we have some level of support in that and making those things happen. I'm never going to raise my hand and pat myself on the back and say, we did it. This is lifelong work that we'll do. And if things look good, yes, part of that is through partnerships and part of that is through communication. Other parts are just having the right people in the right spaces, like you all who are talking to the people in your districts to be able to say, here's what we need and here's what works for us. Because, again, it's not an either or, it's an and. It's an and of wanting to listen to that, support that, and make sure that that's reflected and every aspect that we can. And when you go through our presentation, as you look, you'll look at, and I can't remember what slide it is, but you look at our wraparound approach and how in the center of our wraparound approach is our three-pronged approach. But outside of that is community. Outside of that is resources. So we want to capture all of that with resources from our staff to community, to young people, to elders, to council members, frankly. So thank you again for just noticing that and appreciating that.
Well, we'll continue, and that's a great pivot right into our connection and our work with our Parks and Rec staff. And so I'm going to ask Director Rodriguez to join us here at the table to really talk about how the gun violence and the community healing and centering has come to be a part of the ONS work, gun violence and gun reduction.
Hey.
Director.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Hey, everybody. Andy Rodriguez, Park Director for the City of St. Paul. It goes without saying, Oxford, one of the most tragic, challenging incidents that we've experienced as a department, as a city. But what I'm grateful for is how we as a city collectively responded afterward. My colleagues at this table, Chief, other partners in the room, really establishing a path forward out of a crisis situation. And that's what I'm going to talk about. Kind of going in with the theme of previous conversation, but really helping us navigate challenging conversations, reflection, and a path forward. Our rec center employees are like families. very tight-knit. This impacted all 26 rec centers across our city. Having an employee directly involved in something like that is, in my mind, unthinkable and something that was very challenging to navigate out of, but I'm thankful for ONS and the work that they do to support the park system. But starting with healing efforts and just what kind of contributed immediately right after, so right after that shooting occurred, it's worth mentioning that three employees that were directly on site rendered aid to that individual and is considered a life-saving effort. Healing Streets at the hospital, as mentioned, working with the families and those impacted to help navigate that and staying in constant communication throughout the evening and activation of the Emergency Operations Center to really, like I said, chart a path forward. But focusing immediately on the healing efforts, less than 12 hours after that event occurred, we were in a room with staff and community really breaking down the incident and how we can move forward. That was a very challenging conversation for me, for the mayor, for Brooke, others in that space. And I think that the challenging conversations that needed to happen happened, and absorbing a lot of trauma with that event being so raw at the time was as productive as it could be. So the rec center was closed for indefinitely until we mapped out a future plan. We really started looking at healing efforts for our staff and for our community. And as you can see on the screen, really focusing on, I think there's a slide on healing efforts there somewhere.
I think I hit it back. I don't know how to go back on here.
That's all right. I can talk about it. So just for our Awakenings team, our Steve Randalls, our Tim Simmons, deploying them out to different rec centers to work directly with our rec check programs and our staff. Focusing on the event that happened and trying to absorb that trauma for young people is obviously very challenging, but they have the skill set to do that and did an amazing job. But also worked in cooperation with the county and their critical response and crisis units, deploying them to rec centers with the help of Brooke. And that is for staff, community, anyone that wished to utilize it. But that was greatly received. Irreducible Grace Foundation, really focusing on healing work and trauma specifically for people of color. Doing virtual and in-person sessions. I know a lot of our staff across the city took notice of that and participated as well.
Just yeah. While you pause, Director Rodriguez, Ms. Prince.
Yeah, you know, and I don't mean to get ahead of your conversation or your presentation, but one of the things that we, and maybe you're getting to, are you getting to the SPPS stuff?
Yeah.
Because yeah. I definitely am very concerned about the fact that our rec center staff have been under a lot of pressure just because of issues moving across the street from the high school, and that there had been a series of lockdowns prior to that happening because the district was calling and saying, you better lock down the rec center, mm-hmm. which I just find to be really unacceptable for our rec staff to have to deal with that kind of pressure. And then the other thing, and I don't know if you'll get to it, but it's the busing issue. So I really appreciate this report and hearing how ONS came in terms of when it happened, as it was happening, and so forth. But I definitely want to talk about the school relationship going forward.
Yeah, let's just do that now.
Sure,
yeah.
No problem. So Councilmember Nager and Councilmember Prince and members of the council, really what we've been doing is working in a collaborative. We have a work group with St. Paul Public Schools as well as Parks and Rec staff to really address that. And we've now included the transit and Met Council in just talking about what it looks like for our bus transportation and reevaluating the school bus pass program that they have. But really what we've done is we've brought in a team called Innovation Solutions. And really what that is bringing in a community group that aren't Parks and Rec workers or school workers to really impact and be a part of providing that connection between the schools and the rec centers. And this group is community-based. They're located on the east side. And really what it is 10 members that have come in, and they're there on a daily basis at the school closing time and then transition over to the rec center and participate in activities. And really what they're doing is they're engaging working with youth. They're talking to parents. They're in the parking lot. They're on the corner. And there's the constant communication with schools. So we set up and enhanced our communication program with the schools. So now the radios, the calls, there's a check-in. We have contact persons at each site. So daily we're there. And so currently I'm officing out of Jimmy Lee, and I spend a majority of my time there to just make sure that the process is going and to support the staff there at Jimmy Lee as well as they support us. And one of the biggest things that you heard from Healing Streets and Mark talk about is also taking care of our Parks and Rec employees as well as our employees and ONS employees and that healing component and making sure that we're debriefing with them on a daily basis, making sure that their needs are getting met, but also communicating with the young folks that are there and what's happening in the schools on a daily basis. So we have Innovative Solutions that is currently there filling that space and providing those informations. We're continuously working with a Parks and Rec strategy where we're now looking at embedding a parks worker through monies from ONS into the school, who will then transition from that school into, well, Central, into the Parks and Rec and have that communication and skill set with the young folks to tell staff what's happening at school, what has been happening in the rec center, and what's happening in the rec center there at the school. And so we're going to start with Central and looking to expand that pilot to our other high schools that have that connection with a rec center in their nearby vicinities.
Yeah, and Councilmember Prince, I want to acknowledge, I mentioned challenging conversations. The meeting with the school district was one. I firsthand can account over the last year and a half of trying to work with Central on incidents that happened on their property and then filter over to ours with limited success. Some successes here and there, but then regressing. But I really think we've established a model now in terms of communication and action that has improved that greatly. We have had incidents occur since Oxford reopened, and we've addressed them promptly between the two. We have school liaisons, security liaisons in our building after school making site visits and vice versa. And we expect that to continue to improve over time.
Great, great. I appreciate your candor about that. So yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. That's one of the most important parts out of this. We're right across the street from one another. We serve the same kids. There are data privacy rules. There are other things that come into play about sharing of information.
Right.
But ultimately, if Johnny's coming across the street and had a bad day at school and there's potential for something to happen, we want to know about it. Or we want to be able to tell Central about what might happen the next day should we know about something. And we're actively dealing through those things. I can think of one last night where we were just talking at about 9:30 last night about some stuff that we need to plan for today. So, yeah.
Great.
But jumping back, really focusing on the healing efforts, it's just a great example of all the different collaborative organizations coming together to serve community, young people, talking to RecCheck, kids, young individuals about gun violence that happened at the rec center. It's particularly challenging. Rec centers are viewed as safe spaces, so there's definitely been some trust that has had to be rebuilt with young people and families, specifically at Oxford and across our system. And that's something that's been an ongoing process with Brooke, myself, and other community partners, but we're thankful for that partnership. Also, go ahead.
In terms of that, I mean, we've determined that metal detectors aren't an option. But I'm wondering, how are we managing to keep weapons out of our centers? I mean,
So I think what we're looking at is we're looking at I know that we're doing a complete audit of those things and looking at different security and technologies through our collaboration with ONS. So we're looking at what those technologies look like, how to secure those facilities. But right now, really what it is presence, communication, engagement, conversations with young folks. We've implemented a new check-in system at Jimmy Lee with the young folks so we know who's in the building. But actually, I shouldn't say with the young folks, with everyone who's coming in the building and utilizing those spaces, using our also our other community-based organization downstairs, which JK Movement is really looking at the flow of the building and how do we engage with individuals and having those conversations about that. And so really right now, as we're looking at what technologies we can use, camera updates, all of those things that come around for all 26 rec centers, so not just Jimmy Lee, but all of the other rec centers that we have across, is how do we use those technologies that we have to keep much safe. And metal detectors are great, but you need people watching them, and then you also need that interaction that goes along with that. And so we don't want to have false hopes of just saying, okay, yep, we put metal detectors in and that solved the issue. It's really about the personnel, the relationships, the engagement with individuals, and how do we impact and engage with those individuals during this time.
It's also proactive communication amongst agencies. I can think of an incident that happened shortly after Oxford where we got wind of potential violence at a rec center after school. We were able to proactively address that in partnership with ONS and the schools, get that young person out of that space and away from the schools and rec centers. So that's just another example of trying to deter it when we hear about it.
Great. Thanks.
Ms. Jalali.
Well, and I just wanted to build off your point, Councilmember Prince, and, like, I do appreciate the question, too, and it's hard because it's, like, the trade-offs, and it's what message is sent, what culture does it create, what expectation are we, like, communicating if we have that, but then, you know, the other side is, like, people have to be safe, kids have to be safe, the staff have to be safe, so I just, you know, I appreciate the question, I appreciate you all engaging with it in a really thoughtful way. I think the audit is going to be the right place to dig into that, and also just commenting on, like, the level of coordination happening following that, it matches the seriousness of what happened, and I appreciate you, Director Rodriguez, and Director Blakey for just being, like, arm-in-arm, hand-in-hand in it, and also making our SPPS partners, like, be at the table. That is also, like, a hard kind of unseen part is getting the other systems to work with and coordinate and get on the same page. It's not easy, and we just really can't do this without them. So thanks for all of your work on this. And I think we're, as a city, modeling what coordination looks like. And I am just personally proud of that as a council member. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Just to further elaborate on the relationship and strategy, just there were some physical changes as well. So we moved end-of-day logistics, or specifically school release pickups, to the Dunning parking lot in cooperation with Central. That's really helped with the traffic flow and I'll say people flow to the rec center, and then blocking off part of the parking lot so that the parking lot at Oxford, so that alleviates any parent pickup taking place there, and just really focuses on the young people that are coming to the rec center and giving them a straightforward path to do so. But that communication has been super helpful, along with the radios and kind of routine check-in meetings that we have. And we hope to further that relationship with putting community youth workers hired by us in that space and then to come into the rec center after school, which we're in the process of doing now. Also wanted to note just the updated staffing model. So coming out of being closed, doing retrains, identifying new staff to be within that building, we had to assess and look at what made the most sense structurally from a staffing model standpoint. And that was really putting a top position in that can speak for the building. So that's what we did with the facility and program supervisor, and then a community rec coordinator working underneath them, and then the two community youth workers that I mentioned previously that will kind of be a hybrid position between schools and parks. That's the intention. That is funded out of Brooks' public safety budget via ARPA, and that is, I think, to the tune of $429,000. That will get us through the end of the year. I think there's a budget amendment out there right now on that in Legistar. The question on ARPA is always kind of what the path is after, and that is something that we'll advocate for in a future budget ask. But revamping the staffing model and really trying to push it forward is our intention. Oxford is a unique amenity across our system. There's no other center like it. It is open 7 days a week, 6:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., with an aquatics facility, a turf field, a lease partner. There's a lot of space to cover. So we have to look at that very differently than our other rec centers. So that's the intention of why we went that route with the updated staffing model, but with a specific focus on public safety.
So just to be clear, this is a budget amendment that's coming in front of the council for $400,000+ out of ONS?
Correct.
Can you tell us a little bit more about, is that all of these positions, and what is the opportunity cost in terms of ONS's budget if that's a significant chunk of money moving to this effort?
It is just, it's not all the positions outlined in blue. It's the left-hand category here. So the facility and program supervisor, the two community youth workers, and additional rec leaders. So as far as what the impact is to your budget, I'll let you speak to.
And so what we found is that as we're dealing with ARPA funds and how to actually spend them and the complications that go along with those, that this was an opportunity that fits into the key ARPA funding mechanisms to support community and safety. And so it made sense to allocate these funds as we it involves making sure that we have community-based organizations and community folks that are interviewing and potentially hired into these positions. So it was a unique effort to an opportunity to provide support to our Parks and Rec for safety. And so it just was a logical transformation of those funds out of that $4 million. I know you're going to ask which funds those are that we're giving. So it's out of the $4 million ARPA funds that we were asking to be reallocated from the Neighborhood Safety Community Council community grants portion of those funds.
Ms. Prince.
So that would be one-time money. Mm-hmm. So correct. That's yep. for the next
through the end of the year.
Through the end of the year.
And then we'd have to ask for it in the future budget. Yeah.
Okay. So just like so, thinking out loud through that with you, just because I want to understand how you envision it working. So, you know, my understanding previously was we wanted $4 million for community grants to like basically scale up good work already happening. Now we have this thing happening at one of our rec centers, which. To the point you just brought up, Dr. Rodriguez, is actually like a unique community hub that like draws in youth and families from all around the city, has more hours, has more needs, had this thing happen. And are you envisioning that the purpose is the same just in a different format? Like is the rationale kind of, well, this was going to maybe community programs, CBD, but now we're actually like building a team that would like provide equivalent services. It's just that there are staff and we're like these positions on this chart are helping do that work in a way that has a similar scope and impact. Like I'm just trying to track the thinking process. Okay.
Exactly.
That's correct.
Yes.
And I recognize there may be like competing tensions in how this would work, but because we're talking about these staff at Oxford, is it like they're housed out of Oxford, but then they are probably serving youth and families outside of Oxford and at Oxford, or is this like we're trying to stabilize the site itself, or is it both?
It's a little bit of both. I would say stabilize the site is number one, and that they will provide that resource and support, but there's really a relationship building piece with Central that this staffing model will really focus on.
And it really addresses part of those census tract communities. And so a lot of the individuals that utilize services there at Oxford will be receiving those things. And so it stays in alignment with the funding requests that we had previously.
Okay. Thank you for helping me understand all that.
Ms. Yang.
Thank you. I just wanted to share generally that in terms of adding the new positions, I'm supportive of it because I do think that generally whenever we see that there's maybe a rec center or an area that has higher needs, especially during a crisis moment, then it, you know, that's where we should be investing more resources. And so I think like overall my thinking goes to how can we make the Oxford Community Center and generally like all our rec centers sustainable, because that is really important for the success of not only the rec center but also our entire community too. I wanted to ask you a question, Director Rodriguez. So like in organizing, something that I always do is like, you know, do a debrief about things that went well, things that could have been improved about any situation, any meeting that I'm always a part of. And so like I have a question for you around really like the situation over at Oxford Community Center. Generally, like what do you think, like, you know, if you could rewind back and do things differently, what would you have wanted to see different? And then also what do you think went really well too in terms of how maybe like I would say more so focusing on what do you wish could have been different? You know, I'm seeing that since the proposal here is, well, since you all want to add more positions, obviously staffing is really important. And so that's something I would love to see in the future and for that to be to be maintained. But are there other things that you would have wanted to do differently from the start so that we could have had a better situation overall?
For me, I always reflect back on systems and how our relationship is with the schools and what we can and cannot share and how that impacts our work for the frontline staff. So if I were looking back, I wish we could have made progress on that when things were occurring. And something like this, to me, is so horrible, so tragic that I reflect back on those things strongly that we could have done better there, both schools and parks in the city. And how we work together, and I think we've realized that now, and we'll hopefully make some progress. That's one. I get asked a lot about how we assign staff or how we look at resources, support, and what we give them. What I will say about that employee that was involved in that incident, he has a similar story to me. He has a similar story to many of our employees that work within our department. Was very well respected, liked by his colleagues, and I think that's what made it harder. So I look back at that as did we make the right choice by assigning some of those employees there? I don't think it's fair to be critical of that. I really don't. I think what happened was unimaginable. No one could have anticipated it, and it's hard to reflect back on it.
I just want to, Councilmember Yang, if I could jump in to just build off what you said, Andy, and then answer, I think, part of maybe what your focus or question is. I mean, part of the reason for using the ARP is that it's sort of immediate triage, right? So we have a situation where, as you point out, a circumstance that occurred at one of the rec centers where we want to be immediately responsive to how can we build out a support. And this is a way that directly impacts our public safety right now that we believe can be supportive. And then at the same time, we're conducting an external audit done by outside firm that is contracted in to take a holistic look at the system, not just at Oxford, but everywhere. And so I think that coming into any request for this model or whatever the model is, that that audit can help substantiate in a full review, we would have more information about, hey, you know, what were the opportunities and challenges? You know, that's something that that audit is intended to build out for us in a way that is partly, I think, the city and the system looking at itself, but also from the community and also from an outside entity with a lot of experience in doing that work. To help us to move forward in a really data-informed way, if that's helpful.
Yeah, thank you. I have a few follow-up questions. I'm hearing that, well, I just want to name overall that I really think that the city, also St. Paul Public Schools, like that partnership is really important. And so I'm hearing from you that conversations with SPPS has been really difficult. Is there, you know, any support that you're looking from us, especially as like council members, on how we can step into that conversation and also, you know, really connect with school board members too? Because I think that, you know, there it's really important, you know, that when especially whenever, you know, for a situation so important like this, if we're feeling stuck, we definitely, you know, need to figure out how can we actually move forward. And, you know, we have a lot of elected officials who I know are really invested in the success of this partnership.
I will say St. Paul Public Schools is one of the Parks Department's closest partners. We work very well in a lot of aspects. I think in this one we could have done better, and I think we both realize that. I think Oxford and Central will be a model for other high schools, as Brooke elaborated on earlier, but I'll let you.
I was just going to say one of the things is the continued commitment and conversation with Superintendent Gothard and the mayor and deputy mayor of moving forward and having that open collaboration and conversation. So I think that that's really super important that we continue that. And I think our ask from the Office of Neighborhood Safety is to talk to those elected constituents and talk about the continued support and how we can work together and really having that conversation about data sharing and information. I think sometimes we hide behind that, and that is a struggle of how we get the services and the needs to the individuals within both of those things. So I think if there was an ask from the Office of Neighborhood Safety and from the city to our St. Paul Public Schools and anyone is about the sharing of the information, I think that when we're trying to do the right things, especially when we're talking about violence and protection and public safety, that's the important thing, is to have that continued line of open communication about what we need to do and how can we can best serve the residents of St. Paul. So I think our question or our request would be exactly that, is to have that conversation about open communication and sharing that information.
Did you have any further?
I'm good.
Okay, Ms. Jalali and then Ms. Prince.
Sorry, I feel like I'm jumping around my question because I was in line from three things ago. Okay, coming back to this slide, I anticipate the answer is yes, but, you know, following what happened at Oxford, we as council members received a lot of calls and questions from AFSCME representing members at the site about what they would like to see so that we have a worker-led, worker-informed and centered and kid-centered vision. And I'm assuming that, you know, I recall one of their top asks being like, can you help us with additional staffing? Can we create a different staffing plan? So is part of what we're seeing on this slide also a response to that and inclusive of what they've been asking for? How does that fit in?
Yeah, absolutely. We've met with AFSCME on this. We sat down and went over the proposed model and other structural changes to the actual building, like implementation of new surveillance cameras, a lockdown button at the front desk should it ever be necessary, rather than having to get up and actually physically lock the doors. But yes, they've been lockstep with us throughout this process. I think that in what is often can be viewed as contentious relationships on other things has been pretty well established between myself and AFSCME around these changes.
Yeah. Yep. I appreciate that. And then my last follow-up is just, you know, we've touched on this, but obviously we want to repurpose these ARP dollars and pilot this new staffing model, and then the question will become, then what? And, you know, I heard City Attorney Olson talk about, like, the audit can be a place where we are kind of reviewing how this is working, but what are your initial thoughts on where we go from there so that there isn't, like, a loss of services or that, you know, we make sure that we can support the new model the way we need to?
I think you can expect to see from the Parks Department a couple different asks around the lens of public safety, and this will be one, but also talking about, you know, what surveillance cameras look like at rec centers across the city. There's been requests for other park locations and how that's funded. I think the city is going to look at more of a centralized approach to that, or at least starting to scratch the surface to see how that can function, led by OTC, in addition to other things, just crime reduction by design elements at certain rec centers and things. That's really what we need to focus on.
And I think that that's an opportunity to talk about the collaborative approach that we're having about public safety and an enterprise approach. So not only with the Office of Neighborhood Safety, but Parks and Rec and Library to look at all of what we need as a public safety approach. So from a technology lens, from a personnel lens, and then from a community-led lens about what those needs look like across the board.
Yeah, and that can mean a lot of things. That can mean social service support, mental health support. You know, we rec center staff deal with a lot of things day to day, and it's not just handing out basketballs and other things. Like, they deal with some very complex situations that require my support, Brooke's support, and that is the constant text communication and other things that Brooke and I are on weekly trying to solve.
Ms. Prince, and then I think we should try to wrap up the presentation maybe in the next 5 minutes and leave room for questions.
Yep. Yeah. To both Ms. Jalali's and Ms. Yang's points, I think it's really important for when you're thinking about partners that the City Council is your partner. Mm-hmm. I think this presentation today makes clear that we are hungry for this information. We are definitely wanting to take this information and convey the confidence that we feel when we hear it back to our community. And in the case of Harding, I could not get information back from, and this may be more the mayor's office, the mayor and the deputy mayor. I could not get information back from the mayor or deputy mayor or the superintendent for, I don't think I ever heard directly back from the mayor or deputy mayor, and I heard from the superintendent about 2 weeks later. It's really important that those of us who are closest to our constituents and are getting the phone calls, I heard from teachers, I heard from families of students, and for me to have to say, I don't know what the mayor and the superintendent are thinking about this, is not good. And I think that, again, today, this is such a phenomenal presentation. I cannot tell you how impressed I am. But we've been waiting for this for months. We had decided on a quarterly update, and we have not had anything that looks like a quarterly update. So the point that I want to make is I think you're doing incredible work, and we are part of your team. And we are important people to talk to the people of St. Paul. So please continue to keep us informed of what you're doing. I don't expect a call within the incident. I don't need to get a call that an incident is occurring. But man, within the week, to be able to convey back to my constituents that this is being well handled and that there is leadership at the city level on this would be really good. And the one example I want to give is the HEART program. We get great feedback on the HEART program. And I have a lot of unsheltered, a lot of encampments that pop up in my ward. And it is so powerful for me to be able to, when somebody calls me, to say, let me look at the update. Let me talk to you about what's happening. And to be able to report back really, really good information when the question is asked. I know that you're a new department, and I know you've got a lot of new staff, and you're trying to do a lot of things at once. But anything that can be done to improve communication to the council will only help all of you and our community to understand that we have a plan, we're doing really good work, we're responsive to the constituents. So please, just if I leave you with one message today, it's let's communicate better and more regularly like this, because this has been a phenomenal presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll just end by saying, as we reopened, we were closed for about a month. That was due to staff having to process and grieve and having to rebuild the staff team, but really focusing on training and protocols that will be mimicked at other rec centers throughout the city. And then we are proactively planning for summer as we normally would, with emphasis on what we anticipate to be high-volume locations, like the first 2 weeks at Como Pool always seem to be very busy and required additional resources last summer. And then scoping out other rec centers that we think might need an added layer of attention. So that is really what we're working to do, and hoping that we have a established model at Oxford that can be mimicked at others. But it has been great to have ONS office out of Oxford Community Center and having other city staff be there after school just to support. So DSI, fire, libraries, other folks have been there just to be a resource and provide support. That's been super cool. Greatly appreciate that, and so do the staff at that location. So thank you.
So I'm Mr. Lally, Ms. Yang, and then I really do want to move us along. And Mr. Tolbert.
Yeah, I feel like we're trying to get to the end, and I'm just going to keep my comments till the end.
Oh.
So I'm going to pass.
Thank you so much. Okay, Ms. Yang.
I got you.
Well, I wanted to commend you all for the work that you do. Director Rodriguez, I know we asked really hard questions of you today, but I really appreciate that you were already ahead of the game. You know, our different stakeholders and, like, you know, people that needed to be a part of the conversation, really, you've already connected with them. And I really feel that, like, generally what I am taking away from this, again, is the regrounding of the need for us to really build towards systems that's rooted in serving our youth and rooted in restorative justice, and also making sure that our systems are actually working together seamlessly. And that's something that I want you to know I'm really invested in building out. And I know that that's something my colleagues are also invested in, too. So we're here as partners, so reach out to us if you need any support.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Tolbert. Okay. So let's do like 3 minutes to get to the end of the slides, and then we'll just open it.
Well, the next slide that we were going to discuss, council members, was our response, as we're talking about, to El Rio. That was another gun incident, and I thought it was an opportunity for Aspire, as well as ONS and Parks and Rec, to really talk about or give just a brief of what happens when those events occur. And so we had obviously a shooting there at El Rio that Friday night. We were in immediate contact and responded, myself, Director Rodriguez, met with community members, as well as at that point, I believe was it Commander Stiff? And Commander Stiff replied to, responded to the rec center at that point. And really what it was to provide immediate support to community, but also immediate support to staff. At that point, Parks and Rec staff wasn't there, but staff from Neighborhood House was. And so we were able to immediately get support staff to the young individuals that were there, as well as their front desk staff. We were able to support them in what that triage and immediate triage looked like. And then we met with Westside Boosters, Neighborhood House, Westco, and other Parks and Rec members to talk about strategies of what's next, how to engage. And we now have a standing monthly meeting and check-in with those individuals. And then we were also available to the community at the they had a community meeting the next weekend, I believe, and where we were able to provide information about what's happening in ONS, and it was real in real time. So we were there, and Director Rodriguez the next day talking to rec check parents and community members about what that looks like. But I think the other component of that was we talked about what was going to happen in schools those next days, what was going to happen at what fallout or other potential issues that we would have within the surrounding communities, who we needed to get out and talk to there. Healing Streets was on call to make sure that they were at the hospital for those young folks that were involved in that. And then we also really had a great conversation with St. Paul Public Schools, as well as our probation and corrections partners and stakeholders about next steps. And so I think really to wrap it up in a next minute or so is really to say what ONS is doing, and gun violence is really an enterprise approach within the city with all of our partners. So it's not just one thing. And two, the comments of providing updates and all of those things, that is something that we're moving forward to. We're still a very young office of three. I'm pretty sure there's not too many directors besides myself and Director Rodriguez and Director Hartman that are doing day-to-day direct services as well to the community. And so having opportunities to provide you guys updates in real time is something that we will definitely work on. But we are definitely out there doing the work at the same time and engaging with families. And so if we can keep you abreast of those things, that's something that we will do as we can. And so I'll just leave it to the questions.
And those are all, it looks like there's a lot of great information on those last slides as well, so we'll make sure we dig in and follow up if we have questions on those. Thank you. Mr. Tolbert.
Yeah, thank you. And I just want to start by thanking everybody in this room that's involved in this. Anybody who's involved with this really important work in the community to prevent violence, a life calling, and I'm sure it's very personal, and we have to take pride in it, and just want to thank everybody. One thing I do want to flag, and I really appreciate, and the common theme that I heard this morning was basically how many barriers have been broken down between different departments, different organizations, different things like that. That is something that years ago, you know, as this work was getting off the ground, wasn't happening. And I feel like there was a lot of silos, and that, to me, was the most frustrating thing, is we had a lot of people doing work, but doing it separately, and I think the breaking down of barriers within the city is really important, and I think that's something that that should be highlighted and recognized, because it sounds good and it's easy to do now or to talk about now, but breaking down those barriers, I'm sure, was a struggle in itself. So thank you for breaking down those barriers. The other thing I want to flag, and I think it's really important, I appreciate Chief talking about prevention, intervention, and enforcement, and I think that's something I hope more people in our community can hear about, because, you know, I think there is some skepticism about what ONS is, just because it's not the traditional model necessarily. It's, I think, becoming the model that most communities are going to embrace and should embrace. But I think there is skepticism, because anytime there's change to how we do public safety, some people get nervous, not everybody. But I think that's really important to recognize that, because the way I've often, I'm hockey-minded or, you know, soccer-minded, a similar thing, but I've always said, you know, police in some ways are like a goalie. They're the last resort. And we have a great goalie, but even if you have the best goalie in the world, if you're down on the other side of the ice, if you're down on the other side of the field with the ball, and that's the prevention and intervention part, it's a lot less likely they're going to score if they're not taking shots. And I think people need to look at it that way. And this is really important work to get ahead of time. And it's hard to quantify, too. I know we're going to get towards data-driven stuff eventually, but I think it's hard to quantify of how many people didn't get carjacked or robbed, or, you know, that young person who's now a right-track intern instead of being in the juvenile system. I mean, that stuff is hard to quantify, but you guys on the front lines know what's happening. But I just wanted to flag that because I think it's really important for more members of our community to hear that and why this work is so important and how it's a partnership. With that being said, I do have a couple questions. I think they were going to be addressed at the end of the slides, but I just want to hear the answers. So, one, we've obviously broken down a lot of barriers, but many people doing violence don't necessarily involve borders. What is the partnerships outside of the city of St. Paul look like with not just Ramsey County Attorney's Office, but other law enforcement partners like Ramsey County Sheriff, Metro Transit, Minneapolis, Maplewood, Woodbury, and that
day? Well, I'll speak from the Healing Street standpoint, Council Member, so thank you for the question. From our standpoint, we are setting up meetings with Maplewood. We actually had meetings with Maplewood and North St. Paul, but not this past blizzard, but the blizzard before. And we're in Minnesota, so you know I'm not making it up. We actually had to reschedule those. So those are on the docket right now for looking at the end of April, first part of May. Because it's important for us as working in Ramsey County, we want to put all the energy everywhere. You know, we want to be in all these spaces and give every single city, every single space, what they specifically need. And so reaching out to those spaces, we will be reaching out to Roseville and other places to be able to do the same thing. And that starts with just having a communication with them, going to roll calls. One of the things that's very helpful for us in Healing Streets and making this communication and these connections is when we have leave cards at roll calls, when we have young people who are not of age, the officers have been doing a great job, and this has just been role modeled with SPPD, is they'll hand the card out and say, hey, do you mind if these people reach out to you from Healing Streets to look at resources? And again, they're not required to reach out to us. SPPD does a great job of reaching out to me, sending an email and saying the parents already said this was okay if it's a minor. If there's someone of age, then they ask them directly. So just role modeling what we've done with SPPD, what we've done with ONS, with Parks and Recs, just in these other cities as well. Because again, we want to make sure that everyone is getting what they need and deserve.
Council President, Council Members, for the Office of Neighborhood Safety, we have had a lot of collaboration and conversations with our county partners, working with Ramsey County, the Sheriff's Department, as well as our counterparts over in Minneapolis, so Dr. Alexander and Anthony with the Office of Violence Prevention and Neighborhood Safety for Minneapolis as well. And so really what we've been doing is really building and trying to put the infrastructure in place here in our city and then being able to share that information and knowledge with our surrounding suburbs and individuals there. So really trying to implement and put the infrastructure in place here in the city before, but we're collaborative partners and answer those questions, especially for our Maplewood, Roseville, North St. Paul, engaging in those conversations around violence prevention, as we're part of a network with the National League of Cities as well. So we have that opportunity to share and be in cohorts and have conversations about best practices.
I just say, and I know we're still building, we're still small, but the more we can break down those silos, I know when County Attorney Choi and the mayor and others created the Public Safety Leadership Group a couple years ago, it was really to try and break down some of the barriers. You guys have broken down internally in St. Paul, but I think it's important. And the other question I have is, how many people, do we have any data on how many young people or how many families we're serving right now?
Yeah, we slipped over that slide, but it's back in there. So it's 129 individuals as of right now that are on our referral list. I don't know what slide number that is, but it's in there. The data is, there it is. So 129 current referrals, and with that, 83 referrals to parents and families, and then it's broken down by gun violence, group violence, and then youth violence. And it's the Project Peace Operation Aspire slide. And then we talk about those referrals. So there's 44 referrals that have remained directly in ONS. And so those are the individuals that are currently our program managers, well, myself, are working with. We had 52 interventions that were completed by the Aspire officers. So as part of this program, it should be noted that there are officers who are also engaging in direct services with individuals that don't get referred to. So that might be they have a connection with job employment, some of those other things. So officers that are part of the Aspire unit are handling those. We've relocated 9 families into new housing, and then an additional 55 referrals going to other city and county agencies. And really what that is we are part of a practitioner's table where we sit with Healing Streets, Ramsey County's Human and Health Services, and so we talk about how to connect individuals to those available resources for them, and then 25 referrals to our community-based organizations that we have.
And I don't know, I know there was some trouble earlier getting the slides up, but if there's any way to go back to that slide just to have it up for folks who are here to see, that is a great slide. So.
So, Councilmember Tolbert, if I could just respond to one of the things you said about breaking down barriers. I think we do have great partnerships in terms of the city, and I appreciate that recognition. I also think that we have broken down barriers, particularly with the county. We have at our ongoing meetings, we don't just have St. Paul folks in that meeting. There are, in addition to Mark Campbell and his team, we have members of the county attorney's office. We have the juvenile justice folks. We have corrections. We have human services. We have SPPS. So we already have, you know, a broad and growing coalition, and we're building in community partners as well that are, you know, youth outreach workers and, you know, organizations that focus on violence interruption and violence prevention as well. So. It does go beyond, you know, what you're seeing here at this table, and, you know, we're continuing to still build that as well.
Sorry, one more question. It's kind of scaling up. I know the last couple slides are about growing.
Mm-hmm.
How many families do you think we can, or young people or families, can we support? Like, what is our max capacity?
What is our max capacity? We've surpassed the max capacity already. I would say generally a max capacity is about 50 individuals. But as we look at what of our ecosystem and our glow up is, as we continue to add staff to that, we're over capacity, but we are managing because we have that enterprise system and support from our internal folks in the city. So I think that's part of where I said the cautionary tale of what does capacity look like. So we're beyond capacity, but we'll continue to grow and work with families as it comes. We don't have the luxury of saying we're full. We have to continue to just keep plugging away at it.
Ms. Jalali and Ms. Prince, and then I think we're going to try to wrap up.
I like forgot all my questions and comments. I have a few questions. So I'm just kind of swimming around in a lot of information, so I just need to remind myself. What is the budget now of the Office of Neighborhood Safety? Like, we're looking at all this work. We're looking at all these results. We're seeing all these things in motion. But, like, what is the – when you take out the ARP and, like, the federal funds and you're just talking about here's our dedicated funding, we're doing all this work with how much money?
A little bit over $1 million.
A little bit over $1 million.
A little bit,
and this
over
is everything we're doing. Like,
yes.
I personally find that remarkable, and I think that there's so much more that needs to be done. I think that we need to look at additional dedicated investment. I think that, you know, I'm really taking away the. I know we didn't get to really like go through them, but the cautionary lessons on expansion slides and the. I found it interesting that was put together to just. You know, really provoke us as like policymakers and people involved in shaping the budget to think about not rushing through this work and how to like really lay foundations and build it up over time. So I'm taking that away. And toward that point, I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about that from you as the person leading this and just maybe expand on it a little. And then you talked about this, but my other question is just how are you part of a national learning community where like we do get to share and be in dialogue with other cities around the country. I would love to hear a little bit more about that. So do those two questions make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you, Councilmember Nager, Councilmember Jalali. I think really we are part of the National Office of Violence Prevention Network as well as the Cities United Network, and so as well as the GBI Network. And so a lot of technical assistance working with Harvard GPO as well to grow this. And so that's exactly one of those things, a standard budget with my other partners. We have one of the smaller budgets. I think D.C. has one of the largest at $56 million for or just their Office of Neighborhood Safety to do this work in their Pathways program that go along with that. So I think making this a priority as we build it and put that infrastructure in place is if we look at our other counterparts in budgets and the fact that, you know, our police departments and other folks, if we're working together to address like grant opportunities and things of that nature to make sure that we have a longstanding budget and working with our states. And that's a lot of the work that I get with my peer networks is how to access funds, have longevity, sustainability in the process. And so we're building those things. And so that goes with the cautionary tales about capacity and making sure that we have that infrastructure in place and the actual cost. So if you talked about gun violence and what it costs and what those upstream investments look like as I come back later for budget requests and asks. Those will be those things as we're talking about what do wraparound approaches, wraparound services, being in those places, using community-based organizations to do that work and also sustaining and giving them capacity as well to continue to provide the work is super important. As you know, part of my budget goes to Healing Streets to do some of that. So some of that $1 million goes to Healing Streets to do some of that work. And so it's super important to make sure that we are impactful and providing the cost that goes with that. But our learning communities, we have the opportunity here soon to go to California as well as be a part of the National League of Cities as well as the Gifford Center to talk about the community-led public safety framework and what Project Peace and Operation Inspire. We are a national model because we are probably the only Office of Neighborhood Safety that does a hybrid with GVI and CVI together. And so we are on the lead of innovation and how that also incorporates our parks and rec and our libraries and schools all at the same time. So we're doing some really intriguing work at the same time.
Yeah. That's great to hear. I'm holding the tension of definitely don't want to scale up too fast. And then the strong, strong emotion of just give us all the money. Give the city of St. Paul the funds we need to do this to be a model. I just, right. I will continue to hold that tension and support you all. I just think that in this work, my biggest challenge, like fighting for the public safety vision I believe in over these last 4 years, is that the headline of the breakdowns is always so easy. Things fall apart. That story is so easy. Like a bullet rips through someone's life and that's it. That's the story. And the harder story to tell is what we've spent what feels like nearly 2 hours unpacking here today. And I think all the time about how to tell that story. And I feel like this conversation today has helped tell that story more. I appreciate that my colleagues are appreciating it. I'm taking a lot away today. So I really look forward to continuing to support this work.
Thank you.
Ms. Prince.
Yeah, I have a few questions. I'll be quick. First of all, we didn't hear about the library program today. Is that because it's less involved in the gun prevention side of things, or?
Yes, it's more involved in the council member. It's more involved in our CVI work, and so they're going to be giving a presentation. And then the next time, this was really supposed to be focused on gun violence, and so I tried to narrow it down. We'd be here for 4 hours if we talked
Great.
About ONS altogether, because I didn't have an opportunity to talk about the restorative practices that we have within our community justice unit within city attorney's office that plays a role in the restorative pieces of that. So, I mean, there's a lot.
Right.
We tried to narrow it down to gun violence.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Second question. It looks like we're going to be approving the community council appointees today. Is that right? So how will they function within ONS once they're seated?
So we're super excited for them to get on board. We just closed our first RFP, but then also will be an integral part in having those conversations, being a part of our development of the structure and the long term, and then looking at what community-based organizations and how to utilize those funds. ARPA funds are really complex, and I know that many cities and other offices of neighborhood safety have encountered that ARPA funds have a lot of stringent requirements that go with them, and a lot of our community-based organizations just are not set up to accept federal funds. So really leaning on our Neighborhood Safety Community Council to really look at how do we reallocate those funds within the Office of Neighborhood Safety to make sure that we utilize our community-based organizations in providing that support that you see. We talk about what the wraparound approaches. So for our community-based, our cognitive-based therapies, our life coaching, our incident reviews, components of that, and the supports that they need within the families. And so they will be playing an integral role in choosing who those individuals and those community-based organizations are, and then working within our budgetary process to figure out how to allocate funds across the board.
Great. Third question, and you don't have to answer, but it looks like we have all the right people here today. I frequently get questions about what we should be doing about memorial sites that appear throughout the city on our boulevards, which are obviously very sensitive. They're places where people have lost their lives, but they also become kind of a focal point for follow-up activities that are not good for the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know where that falls within our Office of Neighborhood Safety or who should deal with that, but it is something that's coming up repeatedly, and we want to be able to deal with it really thoughtfully, respectfully, and so I just ask that we develop some kind of a response that I can share with the community. And finally, I see Mr. Grebner here. It does seem like in terms of the communication of things that you're doing with council, because I hear you, you're very short-staffed, you're over capacity with the numbers of just doing the job, and maybe we could work with Mr. Grebner to get quicker feedback on what's happening when incidents occur in our own communities. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Prince. Well, in closing, I want to thank you all very much for this extremely informative presentation. I think the interest that you're hearing from my colleagues is just because this is something that we hear about from our constituents all the time, maybe more than any other issue. And, just to share one question I have that I won't ask you to respond to right now, but to think about for our next quarterly update in July. I'm really interested in how we're working with our community partners. We know we have so many partnerships, community organizations, nonprofits that are really rooted in the community. And I'm curious to know how we're using and working with those partners to get some of this work done, working smarter, not harder. So our community ambassadors, many of the other organizations that you listed here, I hear us talking about moving dollars that were supposed to go to community grants to hiring staff within the city. And there may be a reason to do that, and that might make a lot of sense. But I want to know how we're working smarter, not harder, and really using all the players that we have at our in our community. So that's hopefully something we can talk about in July. And then finally, the theme that I heard coming up over and over again from my colleagues is just this is such tremendous work. How do we tell the story? And I think sometimes we get questions, does the city care about public safety? Is this something that's a priority for you? And looking around this room, thinking about how much time and effort so many talented people are putting in, clearly this is a top priority for the city. But sometimes it feels like we're so busy doing the work that we don't take the time to communicate about it, or we're too strapped to communicate about it. Or to Councilmember Tolbert's point, it's really hard to communicate about crimes that didn't occur. But I do think we can talk about success stories. I think you already have data on number of people housed. I'd love to hear a number of people with a job, number of people who are getting counseling. Right, so I think there are things that we can be talking about. I think using HART as an example, to Ms. Prince's point, is a great one. And I don't think we should do a victory dance, but I do think we should let people see us moving the ball down the field. So I'm hopeful that that's also something that we can hear about, talk more about, and again, having these updates on a more regular basis, I think, is going to help with that. So thank you all for your time. To my colleagues, thank you all for the great work. And we are adjourned.